Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. Coming up on the programme this week:
having to be aware of everything, you know, how you hold yourself, how you talk to people, the pitch of your voice, you know, the way you sit, that becomes just like a constant stressor. And that is a form of, you know, long-term trauma.
What we see from our research is that the mental health of LGBT plus young people are far better in the schools that do LGBT inclusion than the schools that don't. What did surprise us is that the mental health of non-LGBT plus young people is also better.
Even for me, I've been out for, you know, a whole number of years. I've been in such supportive communities, and I can still find myself having that like brief pause before being like, I'm gay. You know, that gets so ingrained that it takes years and years and years sometimes to actually feel as comfortable with it as you feel saying that you wear glasses or that you have a particular hair colour.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday. And welcome to Mental Health Monday for another week. Thank you for your time. My name is Mick Coyle, and once again, important conversations to have. If you're listening to the podcast, welcome to the Mental Health Monday community. If it's your first time, then you are more than welcome. This is the place where we share conversations around mental health, looking at all different aspects of it from all different walks of life. And if the back 200 episodes or so of the programme haven't touched on a particular issue, trust me, we will endeavour to cover off so many more in the months and years to come. My name's Mick Coyle. You can get involved with me. I am on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. That's C-O-Y-L-E. And I'm also the host of the Mental Health Monday Facebook group, which if you type into Facebook, you can join the group and you can post on there about maybe issues that you have got in your life, maybe things you're dealing with, signposting to some brilliant services, suggesting future episodes of Mental Health Monday. Maybe more than happy to hear from you over on the Facebook group. Just check out Mental Health Monday there. Really important conversation to have this week. We're talking LGBT plus experiences. And it's off the back of a survey from the charity Just Like Us, who are a charity working with the LGBT plus community, which focuses on young people. We'll hear from Dominic Arnold, the CEO, and also Pippa, who's one of their young ambassadors as well. New survey that they've produced for this week for LGBT plus month, awareness month. 2 out of 3 young people from the LGBT plus background feel confused or uncomfortable, given their experiences through lockdown. 1 in 5 feel unsafe. 2 out of 3 experience suicidal thoughts and feelings, which is really, really concerning. More than half as well experience anxiety, and some of those issues as well heighten from those particularly within black backgrounds as well. So we'll explore that with Pippa and with Dominic. And as ever, if you want to get involved in the programme, we'd love to hear from you. Drop us an email. My email is on the Twitter handle. I'll also put it in the write-up for the podcast on Audio Boom as well, where you can subscribe to Mental Health Monday to get it every single week. Mental health conversations that hopefully are making a difference. Let's hear from Pippa, but first Dominic, the CEO of Just Like Us, who's probably fair to say he's a very busy man.
Well, I tell you what, I actually started as chief exec of Just Like Us in February 2020. So a really interesting time to start an organisation. I think my first big decision was sending everybody home for 2 weeks to see how things worked out. It's obviously it's changed everything about how we work as an organisation. Just Like Us are an LGBT plus young people's charity, but most of our work is really focused at improving the experiences of LGBT plus young people in schools. So schools obviously closed fairly sharpish, and we had a decision to make about how we were going to rise to the new challenges. We knew that LGBT plus people are much more likely to rely on their friends than they are their immediate families, in contrast to straight young people. And of course, for many LGBT plus people, they were confined to their home without access to those friendship and support networks. So basically, we moved all of our programs online, delivered School Diversity Week, which is a week-long week of activities, the one we're in now. We delivered that completely online and started piloting virtual visits and that sort of thing. But it's all gone pretty well, I'd say.
And that's well, that's good news as well. And it's great that organizations have been flexible as well. I think those organizations who work with young people have found that maybe young people have been a little bit warmer to using maybe some of the technologies that have been involved that we've seen in the last few years, if accessibility is available to them.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's brought us all kicking and screaming into the 21st century. Certainly with school networks across the country, there was always this big variation of how much they'd adapt to technology. Well, they're all doing it now. So it's, I think it's been good for all of us, to be honest. Certainly me too. I'm not the most technology savvy person, but over the last year, it's really brought us all into the space of adapting this new technology. And it's enabled us to reach people in parts of the country that we haven't previously been in. And also for people with accessibility needs.
When we talk about sort of the conversations that you would have as part of the LGBT plus sort of community in quote normal times, there've been various different things and various different issues that the community has been dealing with. When you add the pandemic on top, how has that changed, if you like? How has that changed the conversations that you've been having, and what of those extra issues that maybe the pandemic has thrown up?
Well, we did a piece of research at the beginning of this year looking specifically at the experiences of LGBT plus young people during the pandemic. And what we found was that LGBT plus young people were more likely than non-LGBT plus young people to say that their mental health had got worse. And we suspect that's as a result of being separated from those support networks that we spoke about earlier. We also know that a quarter of LGBT plus people experience tension at home, compared with about 15% of non-LGBT plus people. So, you know, growing up, coming out, all that stuff can be pretty difficult anyway. If you confine LGBT plus people to a home where perhaps their identity isn't known about or accepted, then obviously you're just compounding those difficulties and increasing that mental health need. So it's been a very difficult year for LGBT plus young people. Difficult year for everybody, but particularly LGBT plus young people, is what our research shows.
Let's bring Pippa into the conversation. Pippa, thank you for your time today. It's great to have you on the programme. Does that chime with you in terms of the difficulties that you've experienced over the last sort of 12 to 18 months?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think for a lot of LGBT plus people, we rely so much on these outside communities that are not necessarily in our household or not necessarily with our family. But then do have to take place in public spaces like cafes, bars, libraries. And if all of those are closed, then, you know, there's no place for us to meet safely. And that can, you know, that's obviously been for very good reasons. And we want everyone in our communities to be physically safe and to not catch the virus. But it does mean that emotional or social intimacy is completely been devastated.
It's interesting that you describe it like that. It almost suggests that actually it's good to know that in a non-COVID world that you felt that those spaces were available to you, that those social spaces were available. Maybe the generation before never got those opportunities. And I wonder if we can take that as a sort of a mixed blessing, if you like.
Yes, to an extent. I mean, obviously I'm speaking from a very particular part of the country and from a very particular background. You know, I live in London and I've gone to university, and those tend to be, you know, big cities and universities tend to be the spaces where that is made available. And there are still, you know, there are still places and environments where that's not as common, even outside of pandemic context.
When you sort of see the survey results that Just Like Us have produced this week, 2 out of 3 people within the LGBT plus community, young people feeling confused and uncomfortable, 1 in 5 feeling unsafe, which is a really concerning stat, isn't it? And a high proportion, actually, 1 in 5 young people feeling unsafe, particularly concerning.
I mean, that absolutely, unfortunately, chimes with what I know of, you know, my friends and us growing up, but also what we see in classrooms. You know, we do get questions when we do our talks in school. We do get questions about, you know, family members, how to come out to them in a way that is safe, and, you know, when to come out to people, what language to use, whether it might be better to, you know, maybe not come out just yet, because people do have that sense that maybe their environment isn't the safest place for them to be in.
which is a real worry because we've been confined to those environments for such a long period of time. One of the other sort of standout stats was based around experience of suicidal thoughts and feelings as well. And in any aspect of any community, these are concerning. But I was struck by just how high this number was, 2 in 3, 2 out of 3 people within your cohort of young people feeling that particular way. That's really concerning as well. What's your sort of handle on that as an experience, do you think, that it's so high?
I think if anything, it just shows how much we need to take young people's mental health seriously. I think there can be a sense that, you know, because you're in school or because you're in a particular environment as a young person, people can brush away these problems like, oh, it's going to pass. It's, you know, you won't be in school forever. You know, it's just hormones. It's just going through puberty, whatever. But I mean, first of all, just because it will pass doesn't mean that it's not a problem now. And that, you know, even if something passes after 3 years, that's 3 years of facing that particular problem and being in a particular, you know, mental state of mind. But also, yeah, just because something happens to young people doesn't mean that it's not real. We tend to see mental health issues as only really becoming issues once you're an adult and you face them, but actually these are very serious issues facing young people that need to be taken seriously.
Do you think there are issues particular to the LGBT plus community that have meant that figure is so high, that 2 out of 3 have had suicidal thoughts or feelings?
Absolutely. You know, we know that one of the particular stressors that can cause suicidal ideation is tension within the home, bullying at school, not feeling comfortable expressing yourself in the way that feels authentic to you. And those are all issues that become like highly, highly increased for LGBT plus communities. If you don't feel like, you know, your authentic self would be accepted by your parents, regardless of whether you've actually spoken to them about it, if you don't feel that self would be accepted within your peer community or within your educational community, then that is going to be a big stressor that can, you know, lead to suicidal ideation.
Let's bring Dominic back into the conversation. Dominic, it's so concerning to hear that stat and that stat being so high. Mm-hmm. But as Pippa's just described, almost a perfect storm for some young people, that home environment may be not ideal for them, but also that the lack of the external environments where they've been able to sort of thrive and enjoy themselves, explore various different aspects of their lives as well, have been closed off too, which undoubtedly has an impact. And actually your survey almost shows the data on that now.
Absolutely. I mean, something I really liked that Pippa said is when they talked about the idea of people at school being something that we should care about. And I think that for so long we've said to LGBT plus young people, don't worry, things get better later. And actually, I don't think that's acceptable. I think that the LGBT plus people have a right to safety, have a right to good mental health, have a right to support in the school environment. And the idea that it should just be part of our community, that you have to wait till you get older to make those things yourself, I think is awful. I think is dreadful. And what we know, it's important whenever we're talking about mental health, to say that obviously there's nothing about being LGBT plus that gives you poor mental health.
Yeah, and actually, as part of the survey, 1 in 5 people say they've not had those positive messages from school. You know, it's 2021 now, so these conversations are out there. The resources are available to be able to have these conversations. And actually, the world is changing to the point where we should be able to frame these conversations correctly. And yet, clearly, the lived experience of young people is that it's not meeting those needs. Is that down to, I don't know if there's anything malicious in it, is it just down to sort of ignorance or arrogance that we think that we've got this nailed, or that, well, everything's sort of okay now, you can say what you want, we've got this big woke culture going on, yeah. It must be fine, young people can do what they want.
I think you're right. I think that there's a sense as well, like the LGBT plus community, there's no doubt, has come on leaps and bounds in the last 30 years. We've got equal marriage. We're able to serve in the armed forces. We can adopt. There's the embryo and fertilization bill. You know, all these huge changes that really have, for a long time, with the exception of trans inclusion, put us at the front of the pack. Worldwide. The trouble is that all of these things have related to adults rather than children. And whenever I have conversations with adult LGBT plus people and I tell them what I do, they always say, well, when I was at school, it was dreadful. It's not like that now. And I always say, well, why do you think that? Because really this work doesn't happen through the passing of time. It doesn't work like that. You have to do it. You have to engage with the work. So I think that really there's a message in here. What we're seeing from schools is that some schools are fantastic and do lots of LGBT inclusion work, and some don't do anything, where actually mentioning lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender are almost like dirty words. And what we see from our research is that the mental health of LGBT plus young people are far better in the schools that do LGBT inclusion than the schools that don't. Perhaps that isn't surprising. What did surprise us is that the mental health of non-LGBT plus young people is also better, which I think is really interesting. And what it shows is that if you're in a school that says whoever you are, who you are is okay, that's likely to be better for everyone.
Do you think this is still a hang-up in some people who interact with children or who make decisions that discussing LGBT plus issues with young people will turn them gay, will confuse them sexually, and will create a generation of young people who don't know if they're coming or go. I sometimes get a sense that there's still, from some sectors, that issue, that people are almost scared to talk about. The same people who will happily promote the head boy and the head girl, and there has to be one of each because, you know, you've got to represent that from a gender point of view. Mm. And if, you know, if you're 5 years of age and you're walking down the street with a little girl who's also in your classroom, and you're a boy, and people say, oh, is that your girlfriend? And sort of impose those sort of things. But at the same time, we'll go, well, but we better not mention what the word lesbian is. We better not mention, if we say trans, maybe the following day, all the boys will come into school wanting to wear skirts. And I feel like that maybe that ignorance might not be as blatant as that, but there's still an element of that within sort of decision-making, if you like.
Well, there is. And I mean, the funny thing is that, firstly, it goes without saying, but of course it's not true, because if growing up, if that worked, we would all be straight, because we all grow up in a society where we get overwhelmingly get messages about heterosexuality more than anything. But I think what's interesting about it, and what can happen, is that for people that don't have proximity to LGBT plus communities, I can absolutely see how they're thinking, wow, trans people are everywhere now. This has happened all of a sudden. It's the cool thing to be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the reason for that is not that we haven't had transgender people. We have definitely, without question, had transgender people throughout history. The reason is that sometimes you need to hear what you are from someone else to really understand it. And when you think you're the only person in the world for it, and you don't even have the language to describe it, what happens, obviously, is that has a tremendous impact on your mental health. And actually hearing who you are can be incredibly empowering, and having a role model where you say, oh, wait a minute, that sounds like me, that's how I'm feeling. So of course we're hearing more people say the word transgender, say I'm transgender. And the reason for that is that there is greater awareness of what being transgender is. But of course that does not mean that there are more trans people. There are simply more people that feel comfortable expressing who they are.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, because I think as well, as Pippa, as a young person, maybe hasn't grown up in a world where, I mean, and I grew up in this world where to be seen to be gay, you'd be described as, like, it's not normal. People, oh, it's not normal. Whereas actually now the language has probably changed, but it's still probably not that people say it's not normal, but they probably say it's not the norm. And actually, rather than saying you're not normal, you're not the norm, but actually being not the norm still comes with a sense that you're in a minority, that you somehow has to almost like justify why you are a little bit different to other people. And we have to travel beyond that, don't we, to maintain positivity, do you think?
In a sense, we are a minority, and we will always be probably, you know, a minority group. I think I think the interesting thing is that, you know, people with red hair are a minority, people who wear glasses are a minority. There are lots and lots of different minorities. And I suppose the question is, to what extent do we want to usualize this and say, actually, yes, most people are heterosexual, but actually that's very little importance.
Let's bring Pippa back into the conversation. Some of the issues that we're raising, Pippa, have shown themselves in the survey in terms of people from the LGBT community expressing their mental health from a negative point of view in a way which isn't happening in maybe other sections of society. A likelihood doubling of depression, 1 in 3 panic attacks, 1 in 3 self-harm as well, which is a really concerning stat, and more than half experiencing anxiety as well, is also sort of a really sort of major issue for people coming from particularly Black backgrounds as well, which is certainly worthy, I think, of further investigation, highlighted by the Just Like Us survey. It's a difficult time, Pippa. The evidence is there. The people from the LGBT community, young people from the LGBT plus community, are having a difficult time. We've got to have a structure for that. Otherwise, they pass into adulthood and we can't just expect them to, quote, snap out of it.
Absolutely. And yeah, as you mentioned, there's so many ways in which mental health issues can be compounded also by other factors. So if you're facing homophobia and you're facing racism and you're facing, for instance, you know, food insecurity at home, then all of that gets so much compounded to a point where it's difficult to, you know, disentangle one issue from the other, which is also why we need to take such an approach of, you know, we don't just face one issue all the time. We are not just, you know, one part of our identity. We're whole people. I think particularly with what you both mentioned with regards to, the legal progress that the UK has made and how there might be a bit of a delay maybe in the social progress with that. You know, we have a generation of people raising young people now who have grown up under Section 28. So this idea of being LGBT plus as being something that's completely fine, and we don't need to, you know, tell people that they're weird or wrong for it, was not integrated in education for, you know, a lot of people who are now raising children. So if you don't have that knowledge, even if you're a very well-meaning person and you really, really want to support your children, but you just might not know how to talk about it, or you might be scared to address it, because, you know, a lot of the time it doesn't come from active hostility. It comes from people just not knowing how to address these things. And that's, you know, that's what we're here for, because, you know, we have that lived experience. So we do know from ourselves what issues there are and what language we can use to address it. So I think having that environment where you're just constantly told, maybe even not, you know, you're wrong, you're bad, you're weird, but just like, we don't really know what to do with you. We don't really know how to handle you. That can be such a difficult thing to go through, and it does make you feel weird and does make you feel like you're the only person who's going through this. But it also makes it so much more difficult to address, because you can't pinpoint what it is that makes you so odd. And obviously, you know, then we're here to say, actually, you're not odd at all. You're just, you know, it's all fine. It's all fine.
Is it frustrating to grow up in a world where you almost have to say out loud at times, it shouldn't be so difficult to be me. It shouldn't be so difficult to be who I am, where I'm from, and how I feel.
Absolutely. It's, as Dominic said, like, I shouldn't, you know, I don't always say, oh, I'm wearing glasses, by the way, just so you know, I wear glasses. I hope that you're fine with that. But then, you know, even for me, I've been out for, you know, a whole number of years. I've been in such supportive communities, and I can still find myself, you know, having that like brief pause before being like, I'm gay. Yeah, and that, you know, that gets so ingrained that it takes years and years and years sometimes to actually feel as comfortable with it as you feel saying that you wear glasses or that you have a particular hair color.
And actually, from your point of view, when it comes to that, I guess it's something you're dealing with yourself and you're dealing with in terms of your own sort of personal progression and how you feel about yourself in the way we all try and suss ourselves out as we move into sort of teenage years, adult life, and so on and so forth. But at the same time, to then also have to try and second guess how a community, how a public, how the world will respond to that must just make that triply difficult. And a really sort of difficult process to go to, thinking, right, because even if you'd figured out how you feel in your own mind, to then think, right, but also how am I going to respond when people respond negatively to me? Or how will I respond if I go into an environment where I don't know how people might respond to me? Must make you second guess yourself and your reasons for making various decisions down the line.
Yeah, completely. And that's how this sort of force of, this idea that being straight or being cisgender is normal, that's how it works, even without having to face any overt hostility. You know, I've, you know, thankfully never had any like violence enacted upon me, you know, walking down the street with my girlfriend, but I'm always aware of it. And I always, you know, whenever we're holding hands, I'm always just sort of like, you know, scanning, being like, is there anyone who looks like they might have a problem with this? And I think that is partially also what can be so detrimental to young people's mental health. If, you know, if it's not just being on the street, but if it's also like being in your own home and being in your school or at sports or at, you know, various social clubs, whatever, if you're constantly having to be aware of everything, you know, how you hold yourself, how you talk to people, the pitch of your voice, the, you know, the way you sit, then that becomes just like a constant stressor. And that is, you know, that is a form of, you know, long-term trauma in a way.
But and I'm pleased you've not had that sort of the physical threat. But in terms of when you've heard about some of the experiences of people, the emotional threat, if you like, depression, anxiety, the suicidal thoughts, is that something you've had to deal with?
Yes, I've had to deal with myself, but also I think a lot of time within these communities, I think a lot of us try to, you know, be there for each other, which can be a really good thing, but I think also can be very tough, and it can be very difficult to, you know, also see your friends struggle or see the people that you, you know, consider your found family struggle. And I think that can, you know, sometimes be part of, again, yet again, another stressor is trying to take care of everyone.
Let's talk, Dominic, if we can, to some of the solutions to some of the issues. And I guess the work you do through Just Like Us is a big part of that as well. How do we move forward now we know so much about the lived experience, particularly of young people, you know, the years of experience that people like yourself has as well? How do we move this forward to make sure that the positive steps that have been taken are sustained, but also built upon for the coming decades rather than just months or years?
Well, I think that it's important that this is framed as a problem with a solution. So we know that LGBT plus young people, when they're in supportive environments at home, when they're in supportive environments at school, do much better. Have better rates of mental health, have better rates of anxiety, have better rates of depression. So the solution really is right in front of us. For schools across the UK, if you need support, obviously come over to our website, www.justlikeus.org, and we will give you everything you need. What I'd say to everyone else is that there's a bit of a difficulty at the moment, and you mentioned it earlier about a sort of perceived wokeness of culture at the moment. And the difficulty with terms like that is it's a very flexible term. It can kind of mean anything you don't like in some quarters. But what we're talking about realistically is people's lives. We're talking about young people's lives and the ability for them to live those lives without anxiety, without depression, and in some cases to live those lives at all. So it's really important that schools, parents prioritise this issue, do what they have to, seek outside help if you need it. We're here. So lots of other LGBT organisations that would be very happy to support, I'm sure. But do make sure that you engage with this issue properly, because if you don't, the circumstances can be dire.
Can I ask you about from a parental point of view? Because if a school gets it absolutely spot on and the school absolutely nails it and the young person has a great understanding, but then at 3:15 they go back into an environment which is damaging to that child because the parents either haven't got the understanding or there's other sort of issues that are going on there, misunderstandings or falsifications of thought in regard to people from the LGBT plus community. Yeah. And I guess that's particularly damaging for a young person. So what can parents do? Because I think there might be some parents who are thinking, well, if it's not my child, if it's, you know, my next door neighbor or a friend, I'd probably like to be able to sort of offer them advice or point them in the right direction. And parents, I guess, can take steps here because they're huge influencers on young people's experiences.
So I'd say there's a few things there. Firstly, if you're a parent with kids at school, please ask that school what they're doing to support LGBT inclusion. Now, it might not be for your child, but that action could have a tremendous impact on the school. And, you know, if heterosexual parents routinely ask the schools what they were doing to support LGBT plus young people, we suspect that more schools would do more. I think secondly, that what we see in the research is that for LGBT plus young people, you need someone in your life to support you. Actually, who that person is can be variable. So sometimes it's a parent, sometimes it's a teacher, sometimes it's someone else entirely. But if you're in a position where you're able to be that person for a young person, that will have a profound and healthy effect on their life, and particularly where that person isn't ordinarily there in their immediate circle.
Oh, absolutely. Pippa, we've seen, unfortunately, some examples in the city of Liverpool just recently of attacks on young people from the LGBT plus community. But we've also seen huge marches of people sort of taking to the streets, which I think people have seen to be really, really positive, marching under, you know, a rainbow banner. And it struck me that actually when we talk about the LGBT plus community, as far as I could tell, actually, there were a mix of everybody from all kinds of walks in life, heterosexual community included. And I think sometimes there is this othering we try and do and go, well, that's an issue for somebody else to deal with. I got a real sense from some of the reactions to those terrible, terrible, violent attacks that actually people felt like there was a togetherness around a community. And it wasn't a community to put in a box and put on a shelf. It was a community to embrace and feel like they're part of a city environment or an urban environment.
I think you know, by now you'll probably be hard pressed to find anyone who doesn't personally know someone who's LGBT plus. So I think these are things that are becoming less and less ghettoized to one particular community or one particular, you know, subculture. I think that, yeah, luckily people do know, if, like, even if this doesn't affect me, it might affect my neighbors, it might affect my friends or my family or, you know, the people I work with. And it is good to see that there are people who then choose to stand up for these things, even if it doesn't, you know, affect them directly.
And I think hopefully as a society, we can maybe move on with that in mind for all people who view themselves for whatever reason to be part of a perceived minority, or people who maybe feel that over the years that the way that they are has been sort of shoehorned in one place or put into a box somewhere else. The Just Like Us website, Dominic, has got loads of different information as well. The resources are available, justlikeus.org as well. And it's a good place to go, isn't it? Just to get a round picture, if you like, of maybe some of the issues that young people are facing and the services and the options that are available to them in terms of making those connections.
Absolutely. I mean, we've got a whole host of resources for schools, and the vast majority are free. So there's all sorts of stuff they can get involved with. And if you're an LGBT plus young person yourself, you can come along and find out more about how to get involved and how to volunteer with us.
Brilliant. So thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate you both joining us for the programme. Pippa, thank you for your time too. Thank you for sharing your experiences. Dominic as well, Dominic Arnold, CEO of Just Like Us. Join us for this week's Mental Health Monday.
Thank you ever so much, Mick.
Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.